Welcome back to another episode of Arthritic Bourbon Bikepackers. We have a real problem today. Today is January the 1st. We have a real problem, and the real problem is the fact that we are recording these at like 10 or 11 o'clock in the morning, and therefore bourbon has not made it in an episode in quite some time.
Yeah.
So I think we're going to have to make some modifications. But it's Jerry and I today again. And the topic that we've decided to talk about today was 10 maintenance items or concerns that have crossed your mind for this at this point in the life of your bike and or the coming year.
Yeah.
Now, what year was it that you got? You have a Salsa Fargo. What year did you get the Fargo?
I think it's an 18. So kind of the very end of the year, I think.
Okay. Yeah. So to say that we are bad at maintenance is probably an understatement. Let's just be real with the people here.
Maintenance
that gets done often is completed by the bike shop if it does get done. Otherwise, we probably don't do a really great job of doing our own maintenance items.
Yeah.
But that being said, let's start off with your list of your top 10 things. What's number one?
Number one, and these aren't critical issues. They're just things that I get my attention now and then.
Yeah, something that crosses your mind. Right?
Yeah, yeah. And the first is just the scratches on the paint, you know, because it's a steel frame. Do have some components on there that may or may not be aluminum, you know, on the bars or whatever, like the accessory bars. But I have a carbon fork. And I just worry about, okay, you know, I am damaging the bike's skin, essentially, you know.
Hard to imagine.
Yeah.
You're damaging the skin. I mean, because everyone should know that we are not gentle on any pieces of equipment that we do when it comes to the bicycles. We see them as a tool.
Yeah.
We really do. And we bought them to use them and ride them. It's not like our prized sports car necessarily.
Yeah, not the midlife crisis purchase.
Right, exactly. And so they definitely get leaned up against fences and posts and trees. And you guys know, everybody out there knows how this works when you're bike packing is you don't always have a good place to put your bike. And sometimes it gets laid down. Sometimes it gets leaned up against something. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes we are using click stand is one of our favorite things that we use for bike packing to hold the bike up as opposed to a actual bike kickstand or whatever, traditional. So check that out if you guys haven't. The click stand is a really great product. But on top of that, we hang a lot of stuff on there. So there's a ton of like wear.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Right around the front, you know, the
stem area.
The stem everywhere that the handlebar and the fork, you know, that's where everything it hangs on there. So, you know, and if you leave anything on the bike when you have it on a bike rack, wind blows it, you know. I've had damage. Damage is a little strong word, but had some scratches from the bike rack on the back of the car.
Yeah, I started to say even just transporting on a car can cause a lot of wear and tear, depending on the type of bike rack you have, or lots of people just throw them in the back of a truck or whatever. But, yeah, you're going to get wear and tear on them from that.
Yeah, and, you know, at some point in the past, I got some clear tape and I put it on the bike and I was really dissatisfied with that because, you know, it really didn't do a whole lot for it. And what it would do is it would peel back a little bit and it would just get dust under there.
Yeah.
And it just looked real.
Looks terrible.
Looks weird. Yeah. It almost looked like bicycle leprosy. It looked like it was just peeling, losing its skin, you know. So I don't know, you know, I'm to the point now where I think maybe I take everything off and clean it up a little bit, dry it, and do I put some kind of touch up paint, which you really can't get. These are powder coated frames. You know, I don't know if I could. I just don't know what to use.
Yeah,
it could even just be clear nail polish. Quite honestly,
I know some of the places can color match and give you a touch up paint. I know you can buy color match touch up paints for specialized automotive type stuff, but you would have to go and have it actually done. It's probably semi-expensive. I don't know. I mean, maybe in the grand scheme it wouldn't be, but I guess you have to ask yourself what's the value of the touching it up outside of cosmetic. Certainly you could think about with steel frames, the potential for rust and corrosion. But I've always been impressed about how well these things really are. I don't know if they use a rust inhibitor primer coat or whatever, but they're usually powder coated, most of mm-hmm. them. Mm-hmm. That stuff's pretty durable. So I'm not sure. Of course, it depends on how deep the scratches go and stuff, but
yeah,
paint's pretty good on them.
Yeah. And I guess, it's probably just in my head, you know.
Yeah. Well, it's not a bad idea to keep it.
Yeah.
Keep it in good shape.
And I'm not worried about reselling the bike. I consider this to be a bike I'm just going to continue to keep. And I tell you what, even my kids, they look at it as a real novelty because it's just such a strange looking bike now.
It's a fair family heirloom now.
It kind of is. And I think they all kind of look at it as it's something weird about their dad.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's a great question, but I think it's not a bad idea to touch up scratches and things in places if you can. But again, it's like, what do you touch them up with? I have seen people talk about using clear nail polish to keep corrosion down, you know, touching up spots with that. I know people talk about that with wear points, like rub wear points for bags or whatever that you're hanging on there, that clear nail polish can help. That's an idea too, I suppose.
I might do that here this winter, you know, really kind of disassemble it, clean it up a little bit. I know I said the C word, clean, but, you know, I'll stoop sometime to do that. And, maybe I'll do that. Put some on there.
And with carbon, I guess everybody's concern is always like failure, like scratch to the point of, does it weaken it?
Yeah.
Things like that. But, I mean, it's ridiculously durable, it seems like.
Yeah.
I know that there are failures. Don't get me wrong. The full carbon guys out there have talked about having actual points of failure, but I mean, these carbon forks just really seem to be tough.
Yeah. And it undergoes just a narrow range of types of, you know, stress.
Yeah.
It's like it's been, you know, it's been struck by anything, but, it does sort of have some dinks, chinks in it and stuff. So I don't know if you have to treat that differently.
I'm not sure. It's a great question. Maybe a listener out there could clue us in on what's the best way to maintain carbon outside of just trying to avoid impacts, obviously. Yeah.
Well, and that brings you to my other question. My number two point is specifically on the carbon fork, but you know, all over the bike, the brazons or the eyelets, how are they different? And do I need to start worrying about them? You know, because I've put this front rack on, and I don't think it was right there under the neck area or whatever, there's a little eyelet that I think wasn't really designed to bear a lot of weight. And so I use that for a rack, but I don't put a lot of weight on it. But, you know, I just wonder if you need to really inspect those pretty closely and what I should worry about, if anything, in that one.
When I think about brazons and eyelets, I think the thing that comes to my mind is remembering to always put some Loctite on them for two reasons. One is to keep them from hopefully coming unscrewed, but secondly, also to keep them thing from binding or seizing. Because some of those components, depending upon what you're putting on there, will have a lot of aluminum. Yep. And, you know, that whole mixture of aluminum and steel and all of those things. Loctite, I think, is always just a good idea on anything that's going to be potentially vibrating around. Mm-hmm. It really serves purpose as an anti-seize, but also to keep things from backing out.
When the eyelets they put in the carbon frames, they're steel.
Yeah.
Right. And so it's an embedded piece of steel.
Yeah.
In the carbon.
Yeah. And that's a good question. I'm not sure how that's built, but it's probably worthy to periodically just inspect them and make sure none of them look cracked or loose, I would think. Yeah. Like where they actually are brazed to the frame or built into the frame.
Well, and that brings me to another, these are all pretty closely related. One of my other questions, areas of concern was all the other bolts on the rest of the steel part. Mm. I mean, should I see that some of them start to get rusted, you know, if nothing else is on the cap, where I'm always adjusting it with an Allen key or something. And so they start to rust. And so I, you know, realize that the rest of the bolt is probably rusting at some point. So should I just at some point take them all out, inspect them and Loctite them and replace them if they look beat up?
I mean, I think you could. I don't think it, I don't, probably wouldn't change structurally too much, but I mean, if cosmetically or to keep rust from kind of spreading, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I, you know, over the years, I've bought several different types. Things will come with an accessory.
Yep.
Or I order some because I had a particular, you know, size of Allen key in mind or something like that. But I've never been able to keep it consistent. You know, it would be nice to say, okay, all of the bolts have one or two sizes of Allen key.
Yeah.
And I could just take those. But that
never works out. Yeah. Right. And, you know, some, depending on the product you buy, some of them will be steel. Some of them will be actually stainless steel.
Yeah.
Or some of them will be like a chrome or nickel plated steel.
Yeah.
Which all, of course, corrode at different, you know, frequencies.
Yeah.
The stainless steel is by far probably one of the best. But even people on sailboats will tell you that stainless steel eventually will rust.
Yeah.
It's just more rust, you know.
And then you're back to aluminum, right?
Right.
A lot of things made of aluminum.
A lot of things aluminum.
And you put them then with steel and you get that sort of chemical.
Yes. Hmm. Yes. You get weird things happening there. But it's probably not a bad idea to check them and inspect all of them periodically.
Yeah. So speaking of that, how much should I worry about moisture inside my steel frame bike?
This is a conversation I've had with so many different people. And thought about it a lot. So one of the services, obviously, that bike shops will offer oftentimes is doing frame saver that goes inside the tubes.
Yeah.
And basically, they just kind of pour it in there and sort of swish it around, for lack of a better term, kind of tumble the frame around in different ways to kind of get it to coat the interior of the tubes.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably a great idea if you really are concerned, or maybe even if you live in an area where maybe it would be more likely, like coastal areas where there's salt water, probably would be more likely. That being said, I've always maintained that the likelihood of one of the tubes on my bicycle rusting through by the time I finish using it is probably pretty slim.
Yeah.
Because most of us keep our bikes in the garage. Mm-hmm. Yes, they can still, they're still rusting in there, but it's not like they're sitting in the weather all the time. Most people's aren't. So I think it's a nice to do if you've got a budget. And I think that then if you don't worry about it. Go ride the freaking bike. You probably buy a different bicycle before it'll probably rust through. But
yeah.
I mean, there, I guess anything's possible. What are your thoughts on it?
Well, I have had frame saver put in it. And you know, it's not like you ever peek in there.
You're not running a
and I agree. So many people have said there's just a lot of steel there. Yeah. To rust through is would take a lot of time. But you know, the other things that can happen would be other parts seizing because you didn't take care of it, you know, like the joints and the contact points with other components. That's what I think about a little bit.
I've always contended that I don't know how confident I feel that they actually are getting a good coat on the entire frame, because there's no way for them to know either.
Yeah, right.
They're just kind of pouring it in there and moving it around and hoping that it coats as many things. And I guess the logic there is that the more things that get coated, the less likelihood that there will be areas that that rust. But you know, all of those small nooks and crannies, they can't all get a good coating probably, but
yeah. Well, and you know, water gets in there, you know, though you're out, you know, you're bike packing, you're camping, or just doing a ride, commuting, whatever, there's water getting everywhere.
Or on the back of your car.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's probably one of the places it gets the most water, is when it's riding around town in the rain.
Yeah. You know, you're going to go on a, like we've done a few times, you drive 800 miles.
Yep.
Just to do a bike packing trip, you know, to do a weekend or, you know, 5 to 7 day trip or something. So you put it on the back and you ride, and you, invariably, if you ride 800 miles somewhere, you're going to drive through rain.
For sure.
Unless you're driving across Texas, maybe.
Well, a lot of the times what we do is actually take the seat post out of the bike so that our saddles don't get soaking wet.
Yeah.
Well, then you've got that tube exposed.
Yeah.
It's just like it's a round open tube waiting for water. And
it's dirt, a rain gauge.
Right? Yeah. It's a rain gauge, basically.
Yeah.
So it's not like we know water gets in there, I guess is my point.
Yeah. But, yeah.
And of course, all of these bikes are built with usually drain mm-hmm. ports in the bottom. So if water does get in the tube, it's supposed to drain out and things like that, so on and so forth. But I guess my point is it's going to get water inside.
It's going to sit there. Yeah. Snow, too, if you're riding snow. Now, we've taken our bikes to coastal areas and got some salt water in it because it's really fun to ride on packed sand. It just is. And it makes for great pictures.
It really does. And you get to play around with lower tire pressure, learn some things there. But yeah, it really is nice to do that. But you are exposing the bike to so much more. Yeah. And I think we even noticed that, like the bikes that we had chains on them. Mm-hmm. You know, how quickly that chain would rust or the components would rust being close to that salt water. So you got to really be a little more diligent with your maintenance in that area. But
Which is why I kind of removed mine, right? I know I've got the belt drive and I'm happy with that. But this would be a longer list if I didn't have that.
Right.
You know, I really would be a little more concerned. But similarly, the cabling route, I look at the cabling route and those little cable guides, those are rusting, clearly rusting, and they're smaller. So there's didn't take as much rust to make a difference. And you don't always notice unless you pull those cables away.
Yeah. That's one of those things we talk about, wear points. Even though that's exactly what those are intended for, is to hold the cables, but there's vibration and movement there with those plastic covered cables, and that definitely rubs the paint off of those all the time.
Well, and that's, you know, a lot of bikes have internal cable routing. Mine does not. The advantage being you can get to it and fix it, inspect it, or whatever you want to do, but it's not protected. And so, you know, my cable ties are always breaking because that's where, like, the cable route on the top tube is always getting, you know, dinged around by the bike rack. Because I currently don't have a tray style bike rack.
Not only that, I think a lot of those cable ties just weaken from sun damage and weather UV damage. They get brittle and they'll just snap.
Yeah.
We've seen that many times, and it's probably worthy to go through and inspect those, maybe replace them periodically. And I guess, too, that brings up the point of, I'm guilty of this, by the way, listener. I go buy the cheapest cable ties I can find at Harbor Freight or whatever, and I know they don't last as long. You know, you should really invest in a better cable tie for that kind of stuff, because the better ones will last longer, and the cheaper ones just don't last as, they're just not as well made. They don't have as good a UV protection or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, you probably should go through and replace those. But I'm guilty of just, you know, one breaks, then I'll replace it. But otherwise, I just keep riding.
Yeah. Well, and I noticed the ones that I tend to have waltz, you know, when I have work done, the ones that they put on tend to last longer than the ones I put on.
Yeah, they have to be better quality. Yeah, I'm not sure where they get them or what the style is, but yeah, they definitely are better.
Yeah.
You talk about internal cable routing. I think that's a great option, but we modify and add so many things to all of our bikes that you couldn't route all those. You've got the roll-off cables, you've got the light cables because you've got a sun hub and that stuff. Yeah, all those cables have got to be exterior. You don't have places to route all those.
Yeah.
So even if you have a bike that has interior cable routing for things like shifters or brakes, you're still going to have the cables that aren't those items
if you had anything at all, which is another topic, was the cables themselves. You know, I wonder that. I haven't had them changed in this bike probably ever. The only thing that's the Fargo came with hydraulic brakes, and then so my front brake is still hydraulic. The rear is mechanical with the cable. And I did that because I wanted a splitter. I wanted another, like
an interrupter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I think at some point those should be looked at, because you use your brakes a lot. You don't want them to fail. Same thing with the shifter. You know, I mean, I'm a busy shifter.
Yeah.
Especially now that I have the roll off and I can shift and I'm sitting still, I just kind of mess with it. It's almost like I'm twiddling my thumbs.
A fidget toy.
Yeah. It's weird.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was, if you hear people talk about hydraulic brakes in general, one of the concerns is I'm out somewhere and something breaks, how do I repair it? Mm-hmm. If I don't have knowledge or access to brake fluid and how to bleed them and all of that stuff. And so there used to be this argument for mechanical products just simply for that. because it was much easier to replace a brake cable than it was a bleed a whole system, et cetera. I think they're all probably pretty reliable, but I do wonder, like, how much does sun damage ever impact those that leads to eventually a cracked or broken hydraulic brake line?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what the statistics on that would be because I've never had a bike with hydraulic brakes.
Yeah.
You know, I'm on the Surly ECR and it's everything's mechanical on there, which has its good points and its down points, as we know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I will tell you that I think when I ride the Ogre periodically, you know, when my Fargo's in the shop, the Ogre's, you know, kind of a family bike in a way.
Yeah.
But it has mechanical brakes, and they're good. But I tell you, I do notice when I'm loaded and going down a hill, the mechanical brakes will just, they'll get it done, you know. And so I'm reluctant to get rid of that last one at the front and change it. But probably from a maintenance standpoint,
yeah,
I should.
I think about that a lot, too, about how frequent, like how often should I replace the brake pads? Because mm-hmm. like the ECR has, they're mechanical, but they're disc brakes. And, you know, I'm always periodically adjusting the brakes because you run out of, you know, pad a little bit. So mm-hmm. You guys have all seen them, I'm sure, the little dials that you twist that moves the pads in a little tighter and mm-hmm. gives you a little more pull on the lever then. But it's probably about time for me to consider replacing those brake pads.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a maintenance item that is, you know, probably affected by where you ride and what kind of riding you do. I'm sure like a lot more inclement weather, salt, sand, all that stuff would shorten the life of those brake pads too, I've got to believe.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and you kind of get what you pay for. I'm sure there are lower end materials.
I'm sure. Probably just like car disc brakes that there are better materials and cheaper materials.
Well, speaking of that, things that I would really think about a whole bunch, but you know, we run tubeless,
mm-hmm.
but we always have a tube in case of a catastrophic sidewall failure or something like that. So here's the question. If you have a tube that's just sitting in your bag for years, how often do you look at that damn thing?
Never. You never look at it. It sits in the maintenance bag, and you don't use it unless it's an
emergency.
And you
hope it's not cracked.
Yeah. It's like the spare tire in your car, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how many times you get this. You finally have to use your spare tire, your donut or whatever in their car, mm-hmm. and you find out that it's not, like, it's low on air pressure. You haven't checked the air in the donut.
Right.
It's the same way with a tube that you're carrying around in your bike.
Yeah.
It's kind of like I also invested a maintenance item, back to the idea, original kind of thought, my thought process was that you need to be checking your sealant every 6 months at least. And that stuff, I did a little video on that showing what the inside of the bike tire looked like because I replaced the tires on my ECR, mm-hmm. but the sealant had been in there a while. And it was like a gummy ball mess inside that tire because the sealant had dried up. And it just turns into like, it almost like if you remember as a kid what rubber cement was like when mm-hmm. you let it dry and then roll it up into a ball. That's mm-hmm. what it looked like.
Mm. Yeah.
It was just a ball of goo. It was a sticky, nasty mess
that
no one would ever want to deal with if they didn't have to. But you do have to keep putting sealant in those and have it checked. And it's not an easy process, really. I know people talk about, you know, let all the air out of your tire and stick in some kind of a stick or something to be able to kind of measure the depth of it or whatever. But most of us probably wind up just squirting in, you know, another six ounces or whatever.
That's the way I cook.
Yes,
make
exactly.
chili or gravy. It's different every time.
Right. And so you do have to, you really need to do that because, well, when we did the Katy Trail ride, I got into this actually. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you remember this. We were doing the full Katy. We were in Sedalia and I'm like, why? What the heck's going on? My tire is flat. And I didn't see any obvious puncture, mm-hmm. but obviously there was one because I aired it up and then I rode another couple of miles and it was already getting low again. Come to find out, I hadn't checked the sealant levels. Mm-hmm. And one of the guys, Miguel, was with us. Miguel, I actually happened to have an extra bottle of sealant.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I squirted that extra bottle in there and boom, everything was good. Bob's your uncle, as they say.
Yeah.
everything was good. And so that became a component, that little maintenance component, you know, that little maintenance item that I had to do that day changed my thought process about I always need to have an extra little bottle of sealant, at least one with me. Depending on what kind of tires you have, maybe two.
Yeah.
Because they're like, I think 1.5 or 2 ounce size little portable bottles you can take along, which are nice. I think stands is what I was buying. But also I bought one of the Stans dart tools, which I have never used. But I've always thought, oh, if I have a big puncture, I'll slam one of these darts in there. And if you're not familiar, if the listeners aren't familiar with it, the dart tool is basically this thing. It's almost like plugging a tire, basically, like a car tire. But it's a specialty item that interacts with sealant to seal up big holes. But even with all of that, we still always bring an extra, a tube.
Well,
that we never check.
You hope it's there. You hope it's not cracked.
Oh, it works.
I've had some that looked pretty rough, you know.
And I've not practiced putting a tube in years, like years and years and years and years. And so that process would probably take me 3 times as long. Yeah. And not only that, what's the likelihood that I'm going to pinch it or mess it up when I'm putting it in? And like we've said before, we've done some riding in the Southwest and everything is a pokey, sticky item out there. Yeah. I swear if you put a tube in there, but it'd last a mile. And I know the idea is just to get you to a place where you can fix something probably, but I don't know. That was a long drawn out conversation of me espousing about it, but it is one of those things I've actually had real life issues with that I never check or test or play with.
Well, I think about it, but I haven't looked at it. So there you have it.
But you carry a tube too, right?
I do. I'd carry one, but again, hope you could, cause I've thought about this too. You know, when I've had the belt slip off once, you know, I had to, even to just get that back on was a big deal. I can't imagine all the crap on the bike. And, you know, if I had to just change a tube with that on the rear with the roll off, I mean, it would be a big deal.
Maybe the moral of the story is, when's the last time anyone out there practiced actually taking off the rear wheel
of your bike? Something goes wrong.
Like, even if you're a chain drive, routing the chain through a derailleur. Or getting the cassette with the, you know, the wheel and the cassette off and leaving the chain and derailleur and everything in place. When's the last time you practiced that? I never practiced it either.
Some of the road cyclists that are always changing flats do it a fair bit.
But
the other thing though is they don't tend to have a bunch of stuff on the bike.
Right.
You know, you see those guys, man, they it's like making an omelet. They're just bam, you know.
We would have to take everything off the bike almost. Because you almost have to flip it upside down
to
really do it right.
Yeah.
So you almost have to take everything off.
Yeah.
When you think about how much stuff we pack on there, it's a real hassle. That's why we all do tubeless, though.
Yeah, that's really another argument for tubeless. It's just because the logistics.
Our idea is that even if we had a pretty good gash, we'd like to be able to slam a dart in it, maybe throw another bottle of sealant in, and hit the pump and hope the baby comes back up. That's what...
Yeah,
most of us probably hope for.
Get to the next next brake stop and just, you know, sip and chew while you're watching, make sure that there's still air in it.
That's the hope.
So here's another one. So it's kind of backtracking a little bit, but how often do you grease your seat post? Because they can seize up. Oh, my gosh. You know?
Yeah, never. Not often enough. I have done it maybe once or twice. I think it's probably helped when we were doing more trips, longer trips, because I would tend to take the seat post off almost every time, because leather saddles or nice saddles, you don't want to either get damaged by weather or stolen. another reason.
Yeah. But, you know, every once in a while in one of the Facebook groups, someone will post up there that, man, I just can't get this thing. Because it's usually, it's a steel frame and it's an aluminum post or something.
Another corrosion example.
Yeah.
Two dissimilar metals that have been stuck together for a while. But yes, you're right.
Yeah.
The grease not only, really it's there to prevent that, the seizing. But yeah, that's a great one.
And I don't even know, honestly, you know, I've changed seats and and seat posts so often, because if your fit's not right and you have one that keeps the seat back a little bit, you'll change it. Not even worrying about what it's made out of.
Right.
Could be carbon, could be titanium. I don't even know. Yeah. You know, I just got my hands on a seat post.
Yeah.
And I put the seat on there and I like it. And so I don't mess with it again.
It's true.
So, but I think I'm down to one final one, and it's the rims. I have had some rim issues. As you know, I've had some rim strikes and I've broken a couple, spokes and things. But the issue is because each of the rims have had to be built.
Yes, on your bike, they're custom.
Yeah, because of the diameter of the hub, the sun hub, or the roll-off. And so I have a little concern about the longevity. And as we also stated, I don't clean the bike, so it's not like I'm going to get down there and inspect the rim for cracks very often.
This ties into the tire thing, too, because rim tape with tubeless tires is super important at keeping air sealed up. But also, just the sheer fact, I'll get it out here in a minute, that we're carrying a lot of load. Mm-hmm. There's a lot more weight on the wheels than a road bike usually or whatever. So we think about things like spoke count, number of spokes for the wheel size, durability. And then for you, it's custom spoke lengths and stuff. So if you break a spoke, it's not easy to just replace it.
Right. Yeah.
It's a little much more of an ordeal.
Yeah. And, you know, when you're bike packing, you've got more stuff, touring or bike packing, a lot of stuff. I've had some alarming rim strikes on like trails and kind of off-road bike packing. Also, just if you're in the wrong road surface and you can't really get out of the way and you run into a pothole, I've had a pretty catastrophic rim strike on pavement.
There's some ridiculous potholes out there.
Yeah.
It really is true. And you can't always plan for them, especially if you're in an area where you're kind of in an urban environment, maybe you're restricted to a bike lane that has a pothole. Or we've all seen this too. A lot of times these bike lanes run right along the side of the road where they put all the drains. And some of them are pretty nasty. The drains get like next to where the drain grates are. Sometimes the pavement gets really gnarly right around those.
Yeah.
So you can have a pretty serious rim strike just riding in a bike lane.
Yeah.
Not to mention the stupid stuff that we do as far as hopping a curb or riding, you know, in Big Bend Ranch or whatever.
Well, I had one that was, it was just on a road, and it was because it was relatively new pavement, so it was pretty dark, and then it happened to be under a train overpass where there was a shadow on the road, and I didn't even see the feature of the pavement. I had sunglasses on, and so I didn't even see it, and I nearly came off the bike because of that, just because of the jarring effect. I mean, it must have been funny to watch because I was shocked as hell to find that all of a sudden I'd hit something that didn't apparently exist in the road, you know?
Yeah.
And then I looked down and I had sealant all over my leg.
So it was spewing.
Yeah. Yeah. I got it receded, but it continued to leak. So that's when I was riding to camp with my buddies from back home, and I sent up the flare, had one of them come pick me up.
Did you, and he wound up just kind of self-repairing it yourself?
Well, I didn't try. I originally was going to ride all the way to the campsite, which was another day and a half or something. It was poor planning.
Yeah.
I bit off way too much, more than I could chew. And I looked at it a couple times, and I didn't have a lot of confidence in it, so I just rode down with him.
Didn't
want
to risk it,
basically. I left it at his house, and I had Waltz take a look at it when I got back.
Yeah.
I didn't want to gamble on it, you know? So
I think one of those maintenance items too is just how often should I replace the tires on my bike? You know, on top of sealant, the tires just, I noticed that with my, with the Surly. I had the original tires that came with it. And what happened over time was it wasn't that I ran out of tread. It was that there were like micro pinholes all over the thing. And even sitting in the garage, you'd see these little wet spots that always showed up on the tire just sitting there. And what it was sealant was doing its job. It was sealing them up, but it let you know that how many little micro pores had been punctured somehow. And maybe it's from riding on limestone all the time or whatever. Yeah. But they were in it all over the tire. And even though it still had tread, that wasn't the deciding factor in replacing the tires.
Yeah.
Which I would not have expected.
Yeah. Yeah. That's strange. But I thought you got,
I got use great
out of those tires.
Great life out of them. No complaints. Yeah. Several years and it was fine. It was just interesting that that wouldn't have been what I thought would have been the reason I would have replaced them. I would have thought, oh, I'm going to wear this tread off or whatever. But that
really they're kind of softer compound, right?
Yeah. They were the Nards.
Conforming to
the Nards.
Yeah.
But
that's really the majority of my current existing worries about this.
Yeah.
You know.
Do you have any plans to for any maintenance that you're going to, you've decided I'm going to do, I'm going to take it in or anything? Is it, it's a new year and we're in the middle of winter. So this is like, if you're going to do maintenance, now's a great time to do it because you're probably not riding as much, but is there anything in particular you've been thinking about that you're going to take it in and have them check? Or are you just going to, roll with it?
Well, I might end up just winging it. I don't know, but, I've been thinking about it a lot with the cabling actually. Because if that were to fail, that would be actually a bigger deal.
That's a deal killer.
Yeah.
Or can be.
So I've been thinking about that and also just maybe looking at the routing and just do a better job repairing or replacing some of the zip ties and things.
Well, one of the things you mentioned was that you've thought about relocating or adjusting the way your light is mounted. And you were talking about how you don't have a lot of extra cable.
Yeah, it's short. Yeah.
And so, you know, that probably makes you think a little bit about the cabling and rerouting and
That's a tough one because where it sits now is up high. Mm-hmm. And I like that. But it's high enough that when I'm really bike packing and I have a bag on the front, I've got clearance over the thing. Mm-hmm. But it's out there. It's easily hit by other objects and things, and so it gets loose because it's out there at the end of an arm, a lever, and it just gets a lot more.
Probably a lot of vibration.
And it's getting loose. It's getting harder to tighten now. So,
do you put Loctite on it?
No, I haven't messed with that because of the way it was rigged. Maybe I should. I might look at that. But I'm beginning to wonder about the components that actually are holding that to the accessory bar.
And I know we talked about the other day about the cell phone holder, kind of getting long in the tooth, as they say. Mm-hmm.
And that one, I chose the one, it's what they had in stock when I ordered it. And it has, it's a little bit longer of a mounting system. So it's, I didn't need all the degrees of freedom. You know, I can rotate and all kinds of weird stuff that I don't really need to do. And I figure if I had a simpler one, it would probably last longer.
It's one of the problems I've found too. I actually wound up kind of epoxying mine in place so it wouldn't rotate because I didn't like that feature. I didn't need it to rotate.
Yeah,
I understand why they do it. But it wasn't useful for me either.
Yeah,
and I wound up kind of gluing it in place on my own setup.
It just creates more of a liability.
I know what I use the quad lock thing for the GoPro setup that I have, but I know a lot of people like that quad lock system to lock your phone in. My only complaint with the quad lock is that you either have to use a different case or you have to use one of their kind of stick-on mounts on the back of your case. And I just don't want to carry them when I'm not biking. I don't want to carry that around with me all the time on my case. It's a wonder, and maybe it already exists, but with we use a lot of iPhone, Apple products. If they don't have something that would use the mag back, the mag case thing.
Yeah.
But my guess is it's probably not strong enough to hold the phone like for a jarring impact.
Yeah.
But that mag case idea is really pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
I've used it on camera stuff, like for camera gear.
Yeah. Yeah. I wouldn't, I'd be wary of just a magnetic lock for me, but I've had some mishaps.
And not only that, you've had some crashes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
We get into an entire episode about some of the epic impacts and crashes that you've had and the results.
Yeah. Fortunately, I'm not sustained injuries. Well, I have, but nothing that has kept me from riding, I guess I should say.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but most of them were self-inflicted, not like a car actually
right, yeah.
hit you or anything like that. They're yeah, mostly just
pretty much bad decisions or inattention or,
right.
Yeah. You know, just
which I
bad
love.
Bad fortune cookie wrecks.
Exactly. Well, we won't keep the listener hanging on for too much longer, but if you've made it to this point in the podcast, we always appreciate you taking the time to listen to us. We've had a really good response from people saying they're glad we're back making some episodes. So we're making an effort to do this. We've got some ideas for future episodes, but we'll continue on. Hope you'll join us. We are distributed everywhere where podcasts are, Spotify, Apple, everywhere else, Google Play, so on and so forth. But if you'd like to leave a comment or feedback or ideas that you have for an episode, go to Spotify and they have the ability to answer a question of any kind. The question by default, I think, is there anything you really liked about the episode? But feel free to leave a comment of ideas of things you'd like to hear about on an episode. We're always glad to talk about anything. We used to distribute these in a video format also, but this has really turned out to be such a lightweight, easy way to crank out an episode is just doing audio only. So I really like this format to make it easier. I think that gives us some incentive to keep recording because the simpler it is, the more likely you are to sit down and actually hit the button. So thank you for joining us. We'll see you again in the next episode.